Hello and welcome to Truth Without Radio. Today's date is Friday the 3rd of April 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live tonight at RadioAlbion.com because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door, the Freemasonic victory of World War II and the soon-to-be-released Churchill's Body Bag. Churchill's body count, rather, not body bag. Dennis, good afternoon to you, sir. Good evening. How are you doing?
Actually, I don't think that's a bad title, really.
Churchill's body bag, yeah.
That's just sticking in a body bag, yeah. Yeah, okay, thanks, Chair. I mean, nothing's changed, has it?
No. I mean, same situation. House arrest still, house arrest. And how is the documentary coming along? Is it released yet? Have you managed to get it finished yet?
I need a break, to be honest, from it, because when you go into deep research about such a person, like, you know, it's kind of, you know, I need a bit of a break, you know, to get back to it again. So this week I've just been piecing, I think I mentioned it last week, we've been piecing a bit about Stalin and proving, going to a great extent to try and prove that he's a Freemason, probably a Jew as well.
I noticed you've had a couple of videos uploaded to your BitChute channel as well.
Yeah, some individual ones, and also coming in by the back door, I've started to upload them because I think it's appropriate.
Is that not available anymore on the website, Communism by the Back Door?
I think it is, but I don't think it can blow it up. You know, they have trouble with the server because of the lack of money, what was coming in because of the PayPal thing. So at least these are in decent quality going up on BitChute.
So they will be available again, and eventually the Churchill one will be available again.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. I think I've got four up today, which is not bad for BitChute, is it really?
No, that's really good. So you solved your problem with uploading to the site then?
Oh, yeah. It's just every now and again it slows up. But I think it works on a basis of the more people that use it, the quicker it is.
Well, I think it's a great site, actually, when you think about it, you know, because actually storing all that data is very, very costly, and streaming video is very, very costly. So what they've done is everybody that watches everybody that watches a video, they give up a little bit of their broadband for somebody else to watch a little bit of a video. So it saves them from paying out an absolute fortune like YouTube does, and everybody that's actually watching, they're sort of sharing the cost a little bit whilst they watch a video. Which is, you know, it's a really great idea.
It's neat, yeah.
Very neat, yeah. Well, it's unique, really, isn't it? I can't think of any other video sharing sites.
Definitely the site which nationalists have all headed for, or, well, one could say driven there, really.
And apparently the guy that runs it's British. It's a British endeavour.
It's a British firm, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's fantastic, that is. You know, we're leading the way there with that one. Well,
I don't know, many videos would have been banned up there, to be honest.
No, well, I think he supports free speech, doesn't he? It's
I had some comments at one point which went into, like, you know, BitChute to take a look at this, but yes, he came back on again, so, you know, I've no grumbles, right?
Well, I should imagine, you know, if there's anything illegal up there, obviously he would take it down. But YouTube just remove content that they don't like it because of the politics, basically.
Yeah, it's supposed to be an open kind of forum, isn't it, really, YouTube? But obviously it's ways to the left, isn't it?
It used to be because, you know, you will find news reports and say ITV or BBC, Channel 4, they will have put them out and they'll be absolutely fine on YouTube. But as soon as a nationalist commentator uses the same news story and puts across a different opinion, that will get removed and that will get called hate speech, even though it's the same news.
How do you find hate speech? I mean, that's in the eye of the beholder.
Well, it's just an excuse to censor people. Yeah. That's all it is. But, well, at least we've got BitChute there, and we're very, very thankful for BitChute. And, of course, got RadioAlbion.com. We're not beholden to YouTube.
Of the internet wars.
We've still got all our content there because when we started out, we didn't start out on YouTube or Facebook or Twitter. We started out with our own website. We did rely on archive.org for an archive for a couple of years.
Yeah, they wiped it all, didn't they?
Yeah, and what a bad move that was once they removed it all. But now we have our own archive as well.
Yeah, it lasted a long time.
I think that was because there was pressure that was put on them. Because when archive.org, when that started out, it was pretty good. They had a disclaimer, and the disclaimer said that there is content on this site which, you know, by today's standards, people may be shocked by it. But that's because things were different years ago, and this is a website that is supposed to be archiving all the knowledge in the world, all the information in the world, and some information and some knowledge people might be offended by, but we still have to archive it. So they did actually have quite a good policy, and they had William Pierce on there. They had loads and loads of racial books on there. And then around about the time of Donald Trump getting elected, there was a big push by left-wing activists to get all this stuff removed. And now it's just as if, oh, it doesn't exist. It never existed. And it's removing bits of history. Chris. And it really is removing bits of history when they do that. But that's a different topic. Anyway, what we're going to do tonight, we're going to have a look at some of the new comments that have been left on your videos, because we haven't done a responding to comments and questions episode for a couple of months. I think. Yeah, for quite a while. And we've got quite a few comments here that deal with the Jesuits and some with the Catholic Church. And there's one person that keeps commenting, and I didn't actually take his name down, but he's a Mormon. Oh, it looks like he's a Mormon from the website that he promotes. And what he's basically doing is he's attacking you for saying that the National Socialists were Christian, and he wants to put across this idea that they were occultists, they were pagans. And looking at his website, it's obvious that, you know, he's quite a curious fellow. He seems to do a lot of research. He digs a lot of stuff up, but he's not very discerning. And a lot of the stuff that he's pulled up there appears to just come from pulp fiction, sort of, you know, the paperbacks, rather than, you know, doing any particularly deep research. So I thought we'd have a look at that first. The website is called Occult Reich. It's a blogspot site. And the first thing that you pointed out to me, Dennis, is, well, you know, isn't it funny how websites like that never get taken down?
Oh, they're not forever then.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're going to be calling the National Socialists pagans and devils and antichrists, then your website's going to stay up and you're not going to get any problems from the rest.
I've got some bookmarks taken over, you know, a number of years, which I still have, you know, in the browser. And I went through the other night just to revise, really. And about 6 out of 10 have been wiped off the internet.
Well, that's just it, isn't it?
First 10, right?
Well, that's just it, isn't it? There's holes, gaping holes all over the internet where embedded YouTube videos used to be. It's it's made a right mess of it. Getting back to this website, this Occult Reich, because this is the website that he keeps linking to on your page, as if, you know, this refutes the information that you put out there, Dennis. And really, you know, it's just badly researched. He starts off with a quote from Table Talk.
Oh, game over.
And that's right at the head of the article. So, you know, we know that the anti-Christian stuff from Table Talks is not Hitler speaking. We know that it was produced after Hitler's death. We know that the French version is different to the German version. We know that Bormann was accused of making edits to it. So that's the first bit. But then he comes out with things like Hitler wanted to ban Christmas. And, you know, that's not the first time I've heard that.
Well, I saw a photograph of Hitler at a huge Christmas party what the sources were holding. And he didn't look uncomfortable at all. Although the caption between the picture says this is a kind of a look at this evil Hitler enjoying Christmas, which he was.
Yeah, there's a lot of pictures of him enjoying Christmas. But can you imagine what it would be like, you know, to trying to get somebody elected to office and get him to stay in office? And you've got a Christian country, you've got pretty much the most central Christian country in Protestantism with Luther coming from there, and then saying, I'm going to ban Christmas. Do you think he's going to have any electoral chance of winning an election or winning support? Somebody who says he's going to ban Christmas?
That's their argument. They're saying that he pretended not to be a pagan and only give his speeches on Christianity to get into power, which, you know.
So he thought the way to inspire Germany to continue fighting the war for him was to talk about banning Christmas once he was in power? Well, that you see, that doesn't make sense either, does it?
Well, it doesn't make sense, but the fact that everything he did, I mean, if you're a pagan, you don't go running. I mean, you didn't just run to help Spain. I mean, Franco phoned up and there was an hesitation, and Franco just sort of wanted some kind of, artillery. He sent them the old Luftwaffe, you know.
Well, he certainly didn't want to ban Christmas. And, you know, the other things that this guy's got in there, he says, well, the SS were wearing scary black clothes. So that means that they must have been occultists.
Hugo Boss.
Yeah, because they wore black clothes. I mean, priests wear black clothes. Vicars wear black clothes. And then he's got the usual rubbish about the runes and, oh, the runes, anybody using runes, it must be occult. They've got occult significance. You know, every letter that we use has got occult significance. They mean more than just, you know, the letters making up words, because they originally came from pictograms, like hieroglyphs. And then this one really got me. He says the SS used graves with a Mensch rune. And he says even the graves of dead SS men were adorned not with crosses or other more traditional tombstones, but with a German rune symbol, the Mensch rune, made out of wood. And what is the Mensch rune? You know, it's a symbol for Christ being crucified on the cross. It's exactly the same position as Christ being crucified on the cross. You know, it's the life symbol. I mean, that rune in itself is an example of how Christianity was prefigured in earlier traditions.
Yeah, well, the same way they hijacked the swastika, didn't they, as well, the pagan thing.
Well, again, there's the swastika. What is it? Well, it's the hooked cross. And what was it called in German? The hooked cross.
Exactly.
You know, and the cross is a Christian symbol. It was used long before Christianity, but it's a Christian symbol. And maybe one of the reasons why it was important in the past is because, you know, we had to understand it, because it was going to be important in the future. You know, if you look at things eternally instead of linearly, then because something very important like Christ on the cross happens at some time into the future, the effects of that are still going to be felt at the beginning of time, and they're still going to be felt at the end of time, because they happen outside of it. So the cross is going to be an important symbol.
Well, the question is, if the swastika was truly pagan, would it be banned?
Would it? Well, there you go. That's another good point there, Dennis. Another good point there. Because they're quite happy to promote pagan imagery. They're quite happy to put it outside the EU
parliament. This website's up forever, yeah.
They're quite happy to put it all over the place. I mean, if you want to see pagan imagery, go to a Freemason's lodge.
Exactly. It's
full of it.
And you want to see the occult.
It's full of it. Well, then, and again, this is what I mean by he puts conflicting information there and doesn't really seem to be thinking about what he's writing, because he claims that the SS turned weddings and christenings pagan. How can you turn a christening pagan? A christening is a dedication to Christ. It's in the word christening, Christ, exactly. Christening. So how can you paganize it? He's got another point where he's talking about candles. He's talking about the Ahnenerbe, and he says that they gave out these candlesticks. And when they were talking about the candlesticks, they said these candles can be used at Christmas, also Yule, and they were symbols of Christmas time, basically. And he says, well, this shows that they were pagans. It doesn't. It shows that Yule was just another word for Christmas. And you get that a lot. You get people saying, well, Yule was a pagan word for that time. Well, no, it isn't. Yuletide is just that time of year. And
yeah, they use that one there, definitely. I've seen that many times. Even called Santa, don't they? Pagan.
Well, yeah, Santa, I think, is the only authentic Odinic tradition that we have left, because it's gone on for all that time, and it is basically Odin, Santa and his reindeer, the image of him. with his eight-legged horse. That's the reindeer, and that is still going. But we still pay it respect. We still have it as part of our culture, but it's sort of relegated to the background.
And that is authentic. They kind of stick to it, don't they? Everything Christmas is because of Santa like being hoarding. It must be all pagan.
Well, I think the pagans make it up, don't they? What they're following today. There's no clear line from what went on back then to today. They look basically, if they're nationalist pagans, then they look back to the last 100 years, to the Germanic revival, or 150 years ago, and that's as far back as they go. If it's New Age pagans, then they look back to the revival of witchcraft, which again was just all invented. It was all invented about 150 years ago. And the modern day Druids, that was all invented 150 years ago, because there's no continuous line. Because when our people became Christian, they stopped doing that. And some of the monks recorded what was written, but the actual rituals and what went on, there was no continuation of it. The only continuation there was Santa, and Odin became Santa. As a mark of respect, really, and to keep the tradition going. So, this idea that they were trying to paganize things, and also because when you look at when we were pagan, when was it? Well, it was 1500 years ago. It was in history. So if you're going to look at the history of white people, obviously you're going to look at paganism, because we were classed as pagan 1500, yeah, 2000 years ago. So when you get the Arna Nurbi that's looking up the history of the white race, and they're looking into these things, they're looking at the history of the white race. They're not looking at reviving being pagans again. They're just looking at our traditions to see where we come from. I mean, I'm fascinated by all of that, but I'm not, fascinated by it because I think I'm a pagan. I know I'm not. You know, we all became Christian 1500 years ago.
Yeah, which is starting to slip away, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it is. They've managed to convince us to not just to throw away our identity, our racial identity, but to throw away our religious identity. And if you look back at the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, they're referring to white people as Christians, referring to us as Christians. We were known as Christians before we were known as Europeans, before we were known as the separate nations. White people were known as Christians. We were the Christians, and the Muslims were the Saracen, and the Jews were pagan, and that was it. And that was what unified us, and we built Christendom.
Yeah, I saw a video the other day of a church in, I think it's in Hereford, I think, where it's a map of the world, which had been done in the Middle Ages. And, it's not, totally correct, because obviously they didn't have the aerial means. But basically what it was kind of a round circle, and sitting at the top, which apparently wasn't the north, this was the east, it showed the angels and Jesus in heaven. And you can still see this today.
And was that representing the Holy Land?
And all that was representing where Jesus and God was. Jerusalem was right in the middle of the map.
Yeah, well, it still is today, isn't it? Because it's the centre of the world. It's where all the trade lines cross through there. And then he claims that Himmler was against the Inquisition, and because he was a big supporter of witches, which is basically saying, well, he was a feminist because he was a supporter of the witches, which of course he wasn't. And that's assuming that Himmler didn't realize that the Inquisition was actually against the Jews, because it was against the Jews. It was about finding out who was a converso and who had genuinely accepted Christianity and who was still following the Talmud. That's what the Inquisition was about. That's why the Jews attack it today. And he seems to think that Himmler was against this. It's it's lots of conflicting things like that.
Yeah.
I would just hope that he actually, gives a listen to more of our content and has a think about it and, looks into it a little bit more, rather than just reading these paperbacks and reading things that are written by Jews, you know, just attacking National Socialism.
Well, as I say, they never get knocked off YouTube, these videos, and they love the pagan angle, don't they?
Well, you just have to look at what Hitler said, and not in table talks, but in Mein Kampf and in his speeches. Mm-hmm. And yes, there were a couple of pagans in amongst the National Socialists. There was Bormann, there was Rosenberg, but that was about it. And they were just an intellectual minority. The vast majority were Christian, and it was a Christian country. And to have tried to overturn Christianity would have meant they lost all their support. Because you're talking about...
And there's some arguments over this positive Christianity, which people, again, don't realise exactly what that was to be. They just think it was Hitler rewriting, not just rewriting the Bible, but inventing the Bible as him as God, which was as ridiculous as you can get.
Well, they could get away with that, couldn't they? Because there wasn't anybody objectively reporting what was going on. Positive Christianity was just encouraging the spiritual side of Christianity and trying to get rid of the material side, which they saw as Jewish. And if you look in Acts, it talks about the heresy of Judaizing Christianity. So what they were doing was, you know, something that had been going on for the last 2,000 years, the Judaizing of Christianity, they're trying to turn it into a Jewish religion instead of the Christian religion, and they were fighting against that.
They didn't. Which is why some people today criticize me for mentioning it. They're saying, like, why do I follow a Jewish religion when I don't look at it as a Jewish religion?
It's a funny old Jewish religion that exposes, that exposes the Jews and for what they do, and gives us laws that are the complete opposite of it, and would protect us from all the temptation of the Jews if we obey. Yeah, I'm not saying that the Germans got everything right. You know, they got a fair bit wrong, but the actual motives there were pure and Christian and good.
The Jews tried to take the Catholic Church down for so many centuries. Tells you something. You know, not going to take their own selves down.
Well, you see, this is the accusation that gets levelled at Hitler. That's something he would have wanted to do. That wasn't what he wanted to do. He got rid of the communist types, the progressive types, and a lot of them happened to be in the church, and they were subverting it. And at the end of the war, they took over the church.
Simple as.
Well, let's get into some of these comments then that have been left. As I say, I hope the guy that writes that occult Reich, I'm not trying to offend him. I would hope that he would listen to more of our podcasts and, you know, put some specific questions in if he wants us to answer them.
Will it all?
And critique things. First off, we got BitChute Best for All. He says, I just want to know how you can defend the Catholic Church and the Vatican at the same time as embracing Christian identity ideologies. Are you aware of the fact that important members, also a majority of all members in Christian identity, have honestly admitted that the Roman Catholic Church was pagan from the beginning and is bogus? So, Dennis, what do you make of that?
What I am doing is I'm researching the fact that Germany wanted to change the Bible because of the Jewish influence, and which Himmler criticised, and not only Himmler, others criticised the Catholic Church for being lazy and letting the Jews over the previous couple of hundred years put this doctrine and infiltrate it into the Bible. Now, whether that's Christian identity or not is by the by. The point is that I tend to think that Hitler was right on this point.
Well, Christian identity, I mean, it's really a school of thought, isn't it? You have teachers and students, and it's really a view of history, and it's looking at the facts and saying, well, this is an unarguable fact, and that influences the way that the Bible is understood. So personally, I think you could be a Catholic, you could be Orthodox, you could be evangelical, you could be any type of Christian, and you could discover the truths about Christian identity, and you know, you would just have to accept that they are the truth, and that would influence the way you understood the Bible. But I wouldn't have thought it would mean that, you know, you had to reject your church. And there are people in Christian Identity that do critique the Catholic Church and do critique a lot of these churches. But the reason for that is because they say that the true Christian understanding of the scriptures was lost in about the second century. And up until that time, it was being exposed by Paul and the apostles that these nations that were the barbarian nations were in actual fact the descendants of Israel. They were the nations that were promised to Abraham and Isaac, and were exposing these Jews as being the Canaanites. But then you got these various church fathers that had various different theories about what was going on. And the theories that won out were the more universalist type theories. But it still didn't go that far wrong at first. I mean, it was still all white people at first. They identified the Jews as needing to be kept separate from society. We had the laws that the Catholic Church made against, you know, that we talked about last week, against Christians and Jews marrying, about Jews money lending or being involved in civil society. And they tried to set up a Christian society, and they followed it all very closely. And originally the Catholic Church, I mean, it was just one church. What eventually became the Orthodox Church, and what eventually became the Roman Catholic Church, and what used to be the Celtic Church, were all one church. They all followed the same scriptures. And this guy, this BitChute Best for All, he says the very word Catholic means universal. But that didn't mean universal as in universal today, universal religion for everyone. It meant that all the members of that church used the same scriptures wherever they were. It meant the church in Britain used the same scriptures as the church in Jerusalem and the church in Syria and the church in Germany. That's what the word Catholic meant. And the church gradually became more and more corrupted. Like all things, they start off perfect, and then the law of the universe talks. The law of the universe is that they decay, isn't it? You know, everything decays and rots. So Christianity starts off perfect, and then it gradually gets worse. And you're talking like 2,000 years ago. So it's very, very corrupt now. But the Catholic Church started off in the same way as everything else. But since then, it's got worse. So that, you know, that's how I would.
That's well, how it's I been would attacked by many enemies.
Talk about it, yeah. And then he continues, he says, somebody should be right here. It is either Dennis, who claims the Vatican was a pious organization before World War II, which was then corrupted after World War II, or the majority of Christian
Identity... Well, that's not what I said, but go on.
Or the majority of Christian Identity members who admit that the Roman Catholic Church was pagan and bogus from the beginning of time. So he's sort of making a straw man argument then that there, Dennis, if that's not what you said. Tell us what you did say.
What I said, no. What I said about the Vatican was over different times throughout its history, it's been infiltrated. We were talking about the Jesuits the other week when we were saying that they had to leave Europe. You know, the Pope was actually persuaded to ban them from Europe. And they swore allegiance to the Church instead of the Pope, because these left-wing liberal popes came to power. So Over the centuries, there's been times when the Catholic Church has had bad popes and has been infiltrated. But what I'm saying about World War II was, after World War I, when Rothschilds completely dominated Europe with Freemasonry, the enemy of the Catholic Church, then during World War II was a fight to regain that Europe. And the point was, he got it all back, apart from when Stalin was about to invade, and they had to go into Russia and eventually defeat him. But up to that point, it was all under Christian leadership again. So he's got that slightly wrong. But certainly after World War II, leading up to the Vatican II, that was the last demise of the Church in my eyes, and many others.
That was when it went really badly wrong, was Vatican II. That was
the heretic Pope today. It's obvious. He's saying the things that previous popes in history would have had a heart attack.
But there have been some very good popes through the years. There's been some excellent popes, and there's some very, very good priests. There are still some very good priests today. I think what he's talking, again, what he's when he's saying, oh, the Roman Catholic Church was pagan and bogus from the beginning of time. Well, as I said before we were Christian, we were what is classed as pagan, and we brought some of those ideas with us into Christianity, some of those traditions. I mean, if you look at where we have holy wells today, they're all on sites that were originally holy to us before we were Christian. A lot of churches today are in the same areas as standing stones, and a lot of the churches actually preserved the standing stones and the stone circles. They would actually be brought there so that they wouldn't get used by farmers for making buildings out of. So we've got this influence there, but that's because it's ours. It's not because it's a pagan influence. It's our influence, and that's what we were doing before. It's like, you know, if you think of it, if you look back on your life and you think, well, when I was a child, I was into all this sort of things, and then I became an adult and I was into lots of other things. But, you know, you like to keep around some of the things you had when you were a child, just to remind you of, you know, of your history. And it's the same with the church. They've got things there that remind us of before we were a Christian. So long as you're not, you know, you're not changing that for God, you're not engaging in idolatry or anything like that, I can't see that there's any harm with that. You know, you've got long old traditions that, you know, we need to keep hold of, really, even if we've forgotten the reason for them, or if they originally had a different reason. It's nice to keep hold of them. And a lot of these images, they talk to, you know, our subconscious and the archetypes in our mind. That's why we had them in the first place. And we may have called them gods, but we didn't worship them in the same way that we worship God today. You know, the whole concept of a god was different back then. I mean, because they used to think Caesar was a god.
Well, like Himmler said... You know, it's horrifying to think that some people worship trees as gods.
Yeah, well, again, I mean, he was probably mixed up thinking they were worshipping the tree. I mean, they were probably looking at the tree and saying, well, that's life there, that's representative of the creator. I mean, if you look in the Old Testament, there's a, you know, Abraham has a sacred oak tree that he sits
yeah,
on.
Yeah, it was just a great line, though.
yeah, it's, you know, and again, that tells us that they looked at it in a different way back then than to how we do today. If it wasn't for the Catholic Church, I mean, we wouldn't have our Christianity today.
Can I just say, though, a lot of these arguments, what come in and I suppose do attack me, but the fact is, like, somebody said, like, somebody commented on the very first episode of The Secret Masonic Victory, which wasn't really about religion. And somebody commented, well, just wait until you send the whole series where he goes on this religious nutcrack. So it's like I said to him, look, it doesn't really matter if you believe in God or not. That's immaterial. But if you don't realize what religion had to do with World War II, then you'll never know. You're blind. You will never understand World War II.
Well, people project their own ideas onto things as well, don't they? Oh, I don't want to learn about this because it's talking about God. Well, God was fairly central to the National Socialists. You know, they had Gottbatons on their belts. You know, it was part
down,
of
down in Europe. There were some real diehard religious people. Yeah,
it
was not. It was.
Well, it wasn't like it is today, was it?
Far from it. No, I tried to emphasise that when I had the nun actually. Who was disgusted at the fact that when the Pope toured America, that they had a female representing Jesus on the cross. He went berserk and came out with a real speech, which he used to emphasise that this is the type of feeling in Europe at the time of Hitler.
Well, you were talking to me earlier as well, weren't you, about Gudrun Himmler talking about her father. Yeah, and she was saying that, you know, he wasn't this occultist. They weren't occultists.
He was religious, and he brought them up to be religious.
There we go. Next comment is from somebody called Jim Ewing. He says, supposedly the Jesuits started communism, but some say the Jesuits were also established by the Jews. What do you think, Dennis?
Well, I think a lot's been made of Loyola being a Jew, but I honestly think that's by the by. Again, you go off actions like I go off the actions of Hitler. And if you go off the actions, you'll soon find that Loyola was was out to defend the Catholic Church with his life.
Yeah, he was a converso. And it's not to say, you know, well, and a lot of the conversos were frauds, and that's what the Inquisition was about. But there were also conversos that were, extremely zealous for Christianity. There was Pfefferkorn, I think his name was, that was exposing Reuchlin, and he was the one that was exposing what was in the Talmud. And again, you've got Ignatius Loyola, who started the Jesuits. And when they started out, they were an extremely pious organization.
They must have been bad for John Dee to come with the secret society, the Rosicrucians, to combat him. So, you know, you're talking Freemasonry there. So they must have been, you know, fighting somewhat really bad.
So would you say they were like the opposition to the Freemasons, the Jesuits?
Well, the Rosicrucians, oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's what John Dee sorted for, yeah.
And also Hitler looked at the Jesuits as a big influence, didn't he? And Himmler as well.
When they started because their organization was second to none. Obviously, they've been tried and tested over centuries. So he was always going to look at the SS as these kind of warrior priests.
And the whole idea was to reject the materialist spirit, which they saw as the Jewish spirit. So if they were going to be rejecting what they saw as the Jewish spirit, it wouldn't really make sense to be emulating the Jesuits if they thought that they had been established by the Jews.
Well, the reason that the SS could turn victory, you know, from defeat, certain defeat, is this, you know, this God religion. You know, they wouldn't take a step back because they were what they were. They believed in God and they ain't moving. And they didn't. That's why they were feared.
You know, they thought they were fighting for what's right and good and true, and that they had God behind them. So exactly. This comment here, that supposedly the Jesuits started communism. Now, where would that come from, Dennis?
Well, you tell me. I mean, when I first went onto YouTube years ago, I can remember talking to some people about this, you know, being Catholic and whatever, and they were calling me a communist. Where are you getting that from? Because to me, a communist is an atheist. You know, I don't care what people say, that's the basis of communism. You know, ask any Chinese and ask any Bolshevik. But I don't know. I mean, that's another one of these muddy waters.
Well, Marx was a Jew, wasn't he?
He was a Jew from a rabbi.
All I can think of is maybe he was educated at a Jesuit school. Maybe that's where that comes from. I mean, I'm just making a guess. Yeah, I'm just making a guess.
Well, that's not so much Marx. I think he was the Illuminati guy. The one who formed the Illuminati.
Yeah, it's
come.
But, yeah. Have my name as well. Perhaps someone in the chat room will let us know.
Reminders, yeah.
Since I'm keeping an eye on that. No, nobody's put anything in there yet. Well, yeah, because the Jesuits did teach, they were known for having the best schools, and they're still known for having the best schools today, and a lot of highly, highly educated people go to Jesuit schools. And it may have been that Marx was educated by the Jesuits, but that doesn't mean that... you know, the Jesuits started communism. I really can't see where that idea comes from.
No, I mean, I've never heard Marx being a Jesuit neither, so, you know, again, that one throws me because he's now a rabbi.
And it's quite well known that the communists, I think, up to 90% of the leadership of the Soviets, the Bolsheviks, were Jewish.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that because somebody having a go about that, calling me a liar over that, and kind of got the information and put it on BitChute and said, read this, they're calling me a liar because you're more or less right. Nearly all communists in them days were nearly Jewish, especially in Bolshevik Russia.
And the ones who weren't Jewish had Jewish wives.
Yeah, as well. Exactly, yeah. So they had Jewish kids to their, you know, way of thinking.
Well, I got another comment here by someone called The West is Being Destroyed. And he just asks, why is it called the Babylonian Talmud? And there's two Talmuds. There's the Jerusalem Talmud and the Babylonian Talmud. And they call it that, the Babylonian Talmud, because it was from when the tribe of Judah were in Babylon, and then some of them left to come back to Judea. And when they came back from Babylon, they brought back these ideas that Jesus called the teachings of men, that he rubbished and said that they're all wrong, basically. And then a couple of centuries later, the Jews wrote down these ideas and they became the Talmud, and they called it the Babylonian Talmud. And that takes precedence over the Jerusalem Talmud. But that's why it's called the Babylonian one, because they claim the teachings go back to then, basically.
Yeah, well, someone asked me that question, was the Talmud derived in Babylon? But only it were, I think it was going around before they got to Babylon. So I just said, to be honest, I think it festered in Babylon, to be honest.
Well, you think about it. I mean, they claim that it was secret oral teachings that were given to Moses. Yeah. Now, there's no mention of any secret oral teachings given to Moses in anything in the Old Testament. And they claim that these secret oral teachings were then written down to become the Talmud. But they weren't even written down until, I think it was 400 AD, 500 AD.
Yeah, it's a good point, that, because from what I gathered, Moses went up the mountain to get the Ten Commandments. But what the Jews say is that somebody else down below gave them the Talmud. So you tell me if it's written or not.
Well, there's someone else down below that gave them the Talmud. That was obviously not God, was it?
It's not the word of Moses. He were up the mountain.
Well, the other thing is I mean, when that tiny remnant of the tribe of Judah came back, and it was only about 10% of the tribe of Judah that came back. It was only 1% of all the Israelites that actually came back to Judea from Babylon. When they came back, the land that they had been in, which was the land of Judah, it was filled up with Edomites, Canaanites, Arabs, all these other types, and they intermarried with them. And when they intermarried with them, they had a sort of syncretism with their pagan religions that they had, that these Canaanites had. And that's what became the Talmud. And obviously this mix with Babylonian magic in there as well. But that was really, I think, when it took form, because that's the only reference we have to it. As I said, there's no reference to these oral teachings in the Old Testament. But Jesus talks about the commandments of men. And that is said by all the scholars to be referring to what became the Talmud. The commandments of men.
Yeah.
And he calls it that because he's saying they're not commandments of God. They're made up by men.
Why would you try to defend the Talmud one, saying it wasn't against Christ? Can you believe that one?
Well, it's full of attacks on Christ.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mary, his mother, and Adam, and Noah, Isaiah. And he doesn't just attack Jesus.
Buried in some kind of
excrement. Yeah, it says he's burning in hell and excrement. But it doesn't just attack Jesus, which, you know, so most nationalists know it attacks Jesus, but it also attacks all these other characters from the Old Testament. It shows that they have no respect for it.
That's what Luther got annoyed at, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no respect for the Old Testament. They certainly don't follow it. And then we've got Truth News of Jesus Christ, and he has three questions for you. Number one, he says, is it true that Hitler used the Rothschilds' money against them? I heard from someone that Hitler used some Rothschild money in his movement, but used it against them.
Well, I can't say for sure whether he used it against them. I mean, I presume he would have done, because he did put a Rothschild prisoner and put a ransom on him, and which still stands today, the amount which was paid, which was an obscene amount for one person. So when he got that money, I presume it's quite possible he would have used it against the Rothschilds, but there's no actual proof. But he did receive a huge amount.
Didn't he turn a Rothschild building into a labour exchange in France?
He could well have done, yeah. I mean, they took all the palaces that the Rothschilds had and all the castles and everything, didn't they? So
he may not have taken specific cash and funds, but certainly took resources from them and used them.
Well, took everything, didn't they, really? Because I think, especially when he went to Austria, because he felt that they ripped the Austrians off and he wanted payback.
And he also made that film against the Rothschilds, didn't they, exposing the Rothschilds?
Oh, yeah, where the guy was killed at the end of the war. Yeah, the guy who made it. The Freemason one, was it?
And obviously they did get some money from the Jews. The government got money from the Jews, as you've shown, as you've talked about quite a few times. Mm-hmm. out of those loans that they were expecting to get back. So yeah, Hitler would have used that, and possibly from some of these capitalists that, you know, these people that had actually escaped from Russia.
And there may well have been some communism again. Yeah,
there may well have been some rich Jews that actually did leave Russia, that didn't want to lose all their profits.
Yeah, because even today we've got this split between people who want to be communists and capitalists. Like, you know, you've got your Trumps and your Putins who don't want communism, and yet you've got your Hollywood and your Clintons and this sort, the media especially, that they are left-leaning.
And we've got a comment in the chat room. Anglo Falcon says, was it Adam Weishaupt? I think it was.
That's the guy, yeah.
I think it was.
I don't think he was a Jesuit, but I think he was a Jesuit school.
Right, yeah. I don't think he was a Jesuit. Well, number two in the questions, he says, what should you say to someone that claims Hitler was just a Jesuit puppet?
What would I say?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it was Jesuit to start with. I mean, it's just like every other. I mean, I could name it in the so-called debate when they were calling certain things about Hitler. There's 100 things that were called Hitler. You know, he's only got one testicle. He's homosexual. He likes children. It goes on and on. Every discriminatory word you can think of has been thrown at Hitler. And by saying that Hitler was a Jesuit puppet, I presume the same, like that he was working for both sides there.
Well, how would you prove that he wasn't? I mean, I guess you would say, well, what were the Jesuits trying to achieve at that time? And I think the Jesuits may well have been corrupted by that time. I mean, we're talking fairly recently. So the Jesuits may well have been on the side of these priests that, you know, that he put in the camps for being progressive and for being against National Socialism.
I don't doubt that they may well have been infiltrated. I don't believe they were all liberal at that time, but I dare say there were some. And, and if you found out, they would be thrown in camps. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he studied, he was an altar boy, got to a certain level at a certain age with the Catholic Church, but I think his life's road led in different directions.
I think if he was a Jesuit puppet, he would have been trying to advance the aims of the Catholic Church, and he wasn't. He was advancing the aims of the German nation state. And the German ethnicity. Yeah. And the Catholic Church was, the organized Catholic Church was actually against him at the end. The Pope was writing in encyclicals against Hitler. But at the beginning, you had all the traditionalists in the church were supporting him. And what he was doing was removing the progressives from the church so that the traditionalists were having more and more influence. But then near the end of the war, that sort of reversed itself.
Well, it doesn't help when America's bombing Vatican, which I found out not too long ago.
So, no, Hitler wasn't a Jesuit puppet, and there's no evidence of that. And then his final question, were there any secret occultists in the NSDAP that secretly plotted against Hitler? And then he says, and most of these were spared and even brought over to the US during Operation Paperclip. So it seems to me that the person making this question, he believes that there were secret occultists that were plotting against Hitler.
Well, I believe that some of the aristocracy in Germany who never liked Hitler could well have been originally Freemasons. I've no doubt about that. And when you look at Stauffenberg and his crew who tried to assassinate him towards the end of the war, that wouldn't surprise me if they were Freemasons and occultists. But as far as some being spread and brought over, I think the only reason the Americans brought them over is because they took back the missiles and then the clue how to work them. So they thought we'd better get some scientists before Stalin gets them.
Yeah, that was the main thing before Stalin got hold of them. But yeah, that definitely would make sense that if there were people in the aristocracy plotting against Hitler, and we know that they were working with the British, it was probably Freemasonic connections, because all the aristocracy in Britain was Freemasonic, and a lot of the intelligence and a lot of the politicians and the people that were organising these things were probably, well, almost certainly Masons. So it's probably through these Masonic connections
Well, when I said the other week about me saying Stalin was a Freemason because he couldn't sit down with them, if you noticed, in the beginning it was Roosevelt, Churchill, Stalin. Then when Roosevelt died, it was Truman, Freemason, 33 degree. Then when Churchill was unelected, so to speak, kicked out, at the end of the war, Bevin came in, 33 degree Freemason. So again, Freemasons are going into that club. And I believe if Freemasons are going into that club, a non-Freemason doesn't get anywhere near them.
Yeah, they wouldn't be making these alliances and all these plottings and plans and conspiracies if Stalin wasn't.
Hartley, I think I'm talking about Hartley.
Yeah, I would suggest that. So yeah, there would have probably were secret occultists, but in the sense of Freemasons. But I don't understand this. They were spared and brought to the US. Yeah. I wouldn't suggest that was the reason why they were spared and brought to the US. I would say that it was because
it's a question like how do we get these rockets before Russia fired?
Yeah, it was to prevent the Soviets getting hold of them.
Yeah. We got
Jesus 1488. He says, "Hey Dennis, I had a guy leave me a long post and a list of names about Hitler murdering 300 priests that were in Germany and Austria, with some being Jesuits. I know it's Jewish propaganda, but I don't remember exactly what happened with these priests. I no longer have the article anymore on WordPress to look at because it has been removed. I want to give this guy the correct answer, but I don't exactly remember what happened. Here is his post and the list of priests." And he sends you a long list of what are supposed to be Catholic priests. So what's your answer to that?
Another WordPress removed, he says. I think there are about 300 altogether that he listed. And as we know, Hitler made a statement in a speech before the war, actually, saying that Germany had been accused of putting these priests, Catholic priests, in prison. And he was saying that, as long as the priests preach what they're supposed to preach, he hasn't got a problem. But if they start attacking the government and come with the left-wing liberal views, they will have a problem. And they did have a problem, obviously. So, but that is nothing. 300 priests is nothing compared to when the Allies didn't move a muscle to help the clergy in Spain, when Hitler went over with Mussolini to fight communism. And that's really been hidden from us, that it was a communist fascist battle. That's really not even, it hasn't even really been mentioned in mainstream about Franco's body being moved and the UN were behind it. That's been pretty quiet. So, I think there was something like, 4,000 priests, 2,000 monks and maybe 16 bishops, something like that, was slaughtered. And every revolution, at the end of the revolution, you always find a pile of dead priests, as in the Russian Revolution. So compared to that, it was pretty tame, really.
And Hitler went in there to protect these priests.
Yes, yeah, I mean, the thing was, Franco was Catholic, he was a fascist, as was Mussolini. Although it was not a fascist, he's National Socialist. The two are hand in hand. They both want to protect Europe's culture, and its Christian culture, and its Christian religion. And that's the reason when Franco immediately got in touch with Hitler for help, that he sent far more than he needed to. And then Mussolini came in with troops as well, and the volunteers from the National Socialists went as well. And it was a religious crusade, but it hasn't even been brought to people's, especially in this country, they've got no idea about Spanish Revolution. But the Scottish did, the ones that went to fight, they knew it was a fascist big communist battle, as did the Lincoln Brigade, as the Americans, 40,000 of them, communists, came over to fight the fascists. It's been hidden from certain people in this country.
Well, I'd really like to hear more about the Spanish Revolution and what went on there. But this excuse saying that Hitler went after these priests because they were priests is the same thing that they say about the Jews. He went after the Jews just because they were Jews. And none of that's true. And as you pointed out there, what Hitler said was, and it had this in the Reichs Concordat as well, that they were, priests would, he wouldn't touch a hair on the priest's heads if all they did was preach Christianity. and stick to the spiritual side of things. But if they started criticizing and undermining what the government was doing, then there was, something would have to be done about it, basically. And all the way through, when he was accused of this, he said, well, look, these priests were breaking the law. They were trying to undermine the government. So the same law was applied to them as was applied to everybody else. They're not above the law. They have to obey it, whether they're priests or not. They have to obey the law. Mm-hmm. And the government itself didn't interfere in the spiritual side of things. You know, they didn't interfere in the spiritual side. They said, we support positive Christianity. They tried to encourage Christianity. They tried to encourage there to be a German church instead of there being these different confessions.
Yeah, like, split one,
The Protestants had all these different groups, and they said, well, what we want is one united German church where being German is what, you know, joins everybody together. So, and he put a lot of effort into that for about 3 or 4 years. He worked very hard on that.
Yeah, he couldn't get any work with it, so he decided, fair enough, you know, that's not really my job.
And the Catholics were, you know, they were something separate. They had their Reichs Concordat. They could have their own schools. They could teach their own things. And all they had to do was just not interfere in what the government was doing, not undermine them. And I think it was through misunderstandings of what the Bible says, really, that the Catholic Church was interfering, because they were saying that, oh, it's not racial, it's against Christianity to be against the Jews. And a lot of it was because of the treatment of the Jews. And the Catholic Church was saying, well, you shouldn't be treating Jews like this. But everything that the National Socialists did had already been done by the Church before. There were popes that had written laws saying this is how if we're going to have these Jews here, they have to be kept separate from us. We can't allow them to have these roles in government. We can't allow them to be bankers. We can't allow them to marry Christians. They have to wear identifying clothing so people know that it's a Jew that they are dealing with, because otherwise there is too much temptation for the Jew to rip the German guy off, the Christian off, and that's because that's the sort of thing that went on. And they had to live separately as well, which the Jews wanted. They wanted to live separately so that they could follow their own laws and all the rest of it. And all of this was Catholic law. And yet when Hitler started doing this, the modern Catholic Church was pressured and started to condemn this.
Well, before we go, can I just say that, you know, I mean, although they didn't, you know, call it by its official name, you know, the First Reich and the Second Reich were the Holy Roman Empire. The Third Reich, the Third Empire, was the Holy Roman Empire in everything but name. You know, they just didn't get around to officially calling it because they were in the middle of the war. But that was the Third Reich was the Third Holy Roman Empire.
Well, they did call themselves the Third Reich. They were known as the Third Reich.
Yeah, also the Third Empire, they used to be known as.
And if you look at the central tenet of National Socialism was the good of the nation comes before the greed of the individual. It was about loving your neighbour and doing what's best for the nation, which is, you know, that is Christianity in a nutshell, really. Love your neighbour. There's no greater love does a man have than he can lay down his life for his friend. And all this talk about neighbours, it's talking about your racial kinsman. That's who your neighbour is. It's your racial kinsman, not who you live next door to.
I've never heard a government talk about that, about some people. It's wonderful.
Yeah, and the Catholic Church was saying, well, because they've excluded the Jews, because they don't include the Jews as being their racial kinsmen, then that's anti-Christian, and it's not anti-Christian. And I mean, Hitler wrote about this in Mein Kampf. He wrote about miscegenation and how that was the original sin, and he goes into great detail of it. I mean, this was the whole, you know, the whole idea of National Socialism was based on just taking literally what the Bible says, not necessarily what the Church says, but what the Bible says, and enacting that. And then what you've got is you've got the people in the Church who have a lot of the time have mistranslated, misunderstood these passages. You can read some passages from the Bible to committed Christians, and they'll swear blind that that's not what it says, and then you can read it out to them, and actually they've remembered it wrong. They have remembered it wrong, and the total, the nuance of the verse is completely the opposite of what they think. And this was the excuse that was used, was that he was being anti-Christian. when really he was, you know, as you've shown, Dennis, he was the only Christian leader there was, and he was putting in Christian leaders in all the countries that they liberated. They had Christian leaders instead of Freemasonic ones. Well,
we've all ignored and all hidden. That's the problem. People are stunned when they hear about it.
Yeah, well, that's why we expose it here at Truthful Out Radio. So thanks for coming on today, Dennis.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.